Client preparation for neurofeedback training. Client preparation is a foundational element of neurofeedback training, NFT, as it ensures a clear understanding of the process, its benefits, and its limitations. This phase involves orienting clients to the concepts of neurofeedback, neuroplasticity, self-regulation, and operant conditioning while also addressing their responsibilities, expectations, and understanding of the equipment. Proper preparation fosters trust, promotes active participation, and lays the groundwork for successful outcomes. Concepts. Neurofeedback is a sophisticated method of training the brain to self-regulate its activity through operant conditioning principles. To introduce this to clients, practitioners should tailor explanations to the client's level of education and experience. For instance, clients with minimal scientific background may benefit from simplified analogies, such as comparing the brain's activity to a symphony that needs tuning. Visual aids, such as diagrams of neurons or the human brain, can help clarify how brainwave patterns are monitored and adjusted during sessions. It is critical to dispel misconceptions about neurofeedback. Clients often misunderstand the role of the equipment, fearing it might directly alter brain activity or invade privacy. Practitioners should emphasize that neurofeedback is a non-invasive, drug-free intervention grounded in neuroscience. The training involves monitoring brainwaves and providing feedback, empowering the client to regulate their brain activity voluntarily. For example, showing how feedback displays mirror brain activity can demystify the process and reduce anxiety about the method. Central to this explanation is the concept of neuroplasticity. Historically, the brain was viewed as a rigid organ with fixed functions assigned to specific areas. Today, we know that neural pathways and synapses can adapt due to behavior, environment, or injury. Practitioners should highlight that neuroplasticity enables learning and recovery, providing a scientific basis for the effectiveness of neurofeedback. Describing how these changes occur at cellular and cortical levels reinforces the client's understanding of the method's credibility. This understanding builds confidence in the training and encourages commitment to the process. Lastly, the goal of neurofeedback is self-regulation. This process enables the nervous system to adapt to internal and external changes. Clients must understand that neurofeedback is a mirror reflecting brain activity, helping them cultivate positive states. Over time, this training fosters enduring improvements without reliance on external devices, promoting autonomy in managing cognitive and emotional well-being. Clients often find it empowering to know that they are training their brains to function more effectively, whether for improved focus, reduced anxiety, or enhanced emotional balance. Major stages in neurofeedback training. The neurofeedback process involves several key stages, starting with intake and assessment. During the initial consultation, practitioners assess the client's medical and psychological history, current symptoms, and goals for training. This stage helps tailor the treatment protocol to individual needs, ensuring a client-centered approach. Clients are also introduced to the International 10-20 system for electrode placement, as this will guide scalp locations to be used during sessions to monitor brainwave activity. The measurement and mapping process is explained thoroughly, often using a combination of hands-on demonstrations and educational materials. Following the assessment, the practitioner outlines what clients can expect during neurofeedback sessions. Each session typically involves attaching sensors to specific scalp locations, monitoring brain activity, and providing real-time feedback through visual or auditory cues. Practitioners should explain the rationale behind session frequency and duration, which often ranges from 20 to 40 sessions depending on the condition being treated. Examples from previous clients or case studies can help illustrate the gradual progression clients can expect during their training. Scheduling, cost, and insurance coverage are also discussed during this stage. Clients should be informed about the potential for incremental progress, emphasizing that outcomes vary depending on individual neuroplasticity. Practitioners should stress the importance of consistency, as regular sessions are essential for reinforcing new neural patterns. Additionally, practitioners should outline any opportunities for home practice to accelerate progress and enhance the benefits of neurofeedback. Offering practical tips and demonstrating exercises for home practice can significantly improve adherence and outcomes. Monitoring progress is an ongoing aspect of neurofeedback training. Practitioners use brain maps and client-reported outcomes to evaluate the effectiveness of the intervention. Regular check-ins ensure that the protocol remains aligned with the client's evolving needs, fostering a collaborative relationship throughout the training. Sessions that include time for feedback, where clients actively review their progress with the practitioner, help maintain motivation and clarify the link between training efforts and results. Client role and responsibilities. Clients play an active role in neurofeedback training, and their engagement is crucial to success. Unlike passive treatments, neurofeedback requires clients to participate actively in learning self-regulation skills. Practitioners should compare the process to personal training, where consistent effort and practice yield the best results. By framing the process as skill building, clients are more likely to commit to the effort required. During sessions, clients observe feedback displays, which provide real-time insights into their brain activity. The practitioner's role is to guide them in interpreting these displays and understanding how their thoughts and behaviors influence brainwave patterns. Clients are encouraged to practice these self-regulation techniques outside the clinic, applying what they learn to everyday situations. For example, a client struggling with anxiety might use breathing exercises or mindfulness techniques to replicate positive states observed during sessions. These actionable takeaways ensure that clients perceive immediate and practical value in the training. Practitioners must clearly outline expectations for home practice. Clients should dedicate specific time to exercises, maintain a record of their efforts, and reflect on their progress. Accountability is a shared responsibility, with both the client and practitioner collaborating to address challenges and adjust strategies as needed. Simple tools such as daily logs or mobile apps for tracking practice can help clients stay engaged and consistent. Clinic policies regarding privacy, payment, and scheduling should also be transparent. Clients must understand their responsibilities, such as adhering to session times and notifying the clinic in case of cancellations or rescheduling. Clear communication of these policies fosters a professional and respectful relationship. Educating clients on these practical aspects helps avoid misunderstandings and sets a foundation of mutual respect. Written informed consent. Written informed consent is a formal agreement that outlines the terms of the practitioner-client relationship. This document serves multiple purposes. It ensures the client's understanding of neurofeedback, addresses ethical considerations, and protects both parties in case of disputes. Practitioners must clearly state whether the neurofeedback application is experimental or supported by peer-reviewed research, providing clients with an informed basis for their decision. Including references to key studies or efficacy criteria can bolster client confidence. The consent form also includes details about clinic policies, including privacy, payment, and session scheduling. Clients must acknowledge their responsibilities, such as attending sessions regularly and engaging actively in the training process. The document should clarify that neurofeedback outcomes are individualized, with no guaranteed number of sessions for achieving desired results. Emphasizing this individuality helps manage expectations and avoids potential dissatisfaction. Practitioners should review the consent form with clients, ensuring that all terms are understood. This discussion provides an opportunity to answer questions, address concerns, and emphasize the collaborative nature of the neurofeedback journey. By securing written informed consent, practitioners reinforce transparency, professionalism, and mutual accountability. This process, when handled thoughtfully, strengthens the therapeutic alliance and sets the stage for a successful partnership. Basic setup and operation of EEG equipment. The basic setup and operation of EEG equipment is a critical aspect of neurofeedback training. Proper setup ensures accurate data collection and minimizes artifacts that could compromise the validity of assessments and interventions. This lecture will provide detailed, step-by-step guidance on measuring the scalp, attaching electrodes, preparing the scalp, and operating the EEG equipment, following established protocols and best practices. Practitioners must emphasize precision and consistency throughout the process to ensure reliable outcomes. Client basics. Understanding the equipment used in neurofeedback training is an essential part of client preparation. During the first session, practitioners introduce clients to the components and functionality of the devices. Electrodes, often referred to as sensors, are described in lay terms to avoid confusion or apprehension. Practitioners explain that these sensors monitor electrical activity from the brain without transmitting current into the body. Demonstrations of how sensors are applied and used can significantly ease client apprehensions. Clients are also educated about the steps involved in skin preparation, such as cleaning the scalp to ensure accurate readings. Practitioners demonstrate how sensors are attached and highlight the significance of site selection based on the International 10-20 system. For example, sites associated with attention or emotional regulation may be targeted depending on the client's goals. Demonstrating the importance of clean, secure attachments reinforces the precision required for accurate readings. Key concepts such as amplitude, frequency, and Z-scores are introduced to help clients understand feedback displays. Amplitude refers to the strength of the brainwave signal, while frequency reflects the speed of oscillations. Z-scores provide a statistical comparison of the client's brain activity against normative data, offering insights into deviations from typical patterns. Practitioners should use visual aids or interactive software to help clients grasp these concepts intuitively. Finally, practitioners outline what data is recorded during a session and how it is used to monitor progress. By demystifying the equipment and its purpose, practitioners alleviate fears and enhance client confidence in the neurofeedback process. Providing clients with a summary report of their sessions, including graphical data, can further engage them in the process and illustrate tangible progress. Addressing client comfort and communication. Client comfort is paramount during site preparation, as it directly affects their cooperation and the success of the session. Begin by explaining each step of the process in simple, non-technical terms. Reassure the client that they can ask questions or express concerns at any time. Provide the client with a mirror to observe the preparation process if they wish. This transparency helps alleviate anxiety and increases their understanding of the procedure. Offer cushions, blankets, or other comfort aids to ensure they are relaxed and well-supported throughout the session. For clients with sensory sensitivities, modify the preparation process to minimize discomfort. For example, use softer applicators, avoid excessive abrasion, and adjust lighting or noise levels in the room. Frequent check-ins with the client during preparation help ensure their needs are being met. After electrode placement, encourage the client to move slightly and report any discomfort. Adjustments can be made to the electrode positioning or cable orientation to improve their experience. Documenting client feedback helps refine preparation techniques for future sessions. Maintaining hygiene and infection control. Hygiene is a critical aspect of site preparation to prevent infection and ensure client safety. Practitioners must adhere to strict cleanliness protocols throughout the process. Begin by washing hands thoroughly and wearing disposable gloves during scalp preparation and electrode placement. Change gloves if they become contaminated or if you need to touch other equipment. All reusable electrodes and tools should be sterilized between sessions according to the manufacturer's guidelines. Use single-use applicators for conductive gel and skin preparation products whenever possible to avoid cross-contamination. Dispose of all used materials, such as alcohol wipes and cotton swabs, in a designated biohazard container. Educate clients about the measures taken to ensure hygiene and safety. For example, explain the purpose of cleaning and sterilization procedures, as well as the use of disposable materials. Transparency in these practices builds trust and reassures clients about their safety during the session. If the client's scalp shows signs of irritation, redness, or open sores, avoid placing electrodes in those areas. Consult with the client and, if necessary, reschedule the session until the skin has healed. Always document any skin conditions observed during preparation and communicate with the client about appropriate aftercare. Hardware and software setup. Turn on the computer and amplifier and open the neurofeedback software so that it is ready to check impedance or offset. Once the electrodes are in place, begin by attaching the electrode cables to intermediate cables and then those to the amplifier inputs. Ensure that each cable corresponds to its assigned channel, as mismatches can lead to inaccurate readings. Check impedance or offset with the neurofeedback software's built-in tools to verify that all connections are secure and functional. Impedance levels should ideally be below 5 cohms, although values under 20 cohms are acceptable for clinical use. Adjust electrodes as needed to reduce impedance, ensuring strong and reliable signal acquisition. If issues arise, troubleshoot by checking the electrode placements and connections. If necessary, remove any problematic electrode, re-clean the site, apply new paste to the electrode, and recheck impedance. For example, loose or improperly attached electrodes can often be the culprit for poor signal quality. Using automated impedance tracking features can save time and help identify problematic sites during long assessments. Configure the software settings according to the session protocol or open a previously used protocol. This includes selecting the correct channels, setting sampling rates, and enabling artifact detection features. Practitioners must be familiar with the software's interface and functionality to efficiently manage these settings. Comprehensive training in the software's advanced features, such as real-time data filtering or customized feedback parameters, enhances session efficiency and outcomes. Document all setup parameters for consistency in future sessions. Session data can be saved for training segments, e.g., 10 3-minute periods, as well as for pre-training and post-training baselines, if desired. These data can be reviewed after the session to remove artifactual data and generate statistics for graphing session-to-session progress. 10 to 20 system electrode placements. The 10 to 20 system is a globally recognized standard for electrode placement in electroencephalography, e.g. It ensures consistent and reproducible measurements by using anatomical landmarks on the scalp to locate electrode sites. This lecture provides a detailed, step-by-step explanation of the 10 to 20 system, including measuring, marking, and verifying electrode placements. Mastery of this system is essential for practitioners to ensure accurate and reliable EEG recordings. Overview of the 10 to 20 system. The 10 to 20 system derives its name from the distances between electrode placement points, which are either 10% or 20% of the total measured distance between key anatomical landmarks in each of three planes. These landmarks include the nasion, the depression at the bridge of the nose, the enean, the bony prominence at the back of the skull, and the preauricular notches, the depressions located just in front of the ears. These reference points form the basis for dividing the scalp into a grid for electrode placement. To begin, practitioners measure the nasion to enean distance, which establishes the midline of the scalp. The preliminary midpoint of this line is marked as CZ, the central zenith, top, electrode site. An additional measurement is taken from the left to the right preauricular points traversing the central strip to locate the lateral midpoint of the scalp and adjust the preliminary location of CZ. These two lines form intersecting axes that define the primary grid for electrode placement. Sites are further identified by their percentage distances along these axes and along a line going around the circumference of the head that intersects points that are 10% of the midline distance above the enean and the nasion and 10% of the central strip distance above each preauricular notch. These three lines and their lengths, along with the bony landmarks, inian, nasion, preauricular notches, allow the neurofeedback provider to systematically and reliably calculate where on the lines to place electrodes. The system categorizes electrode sites using letters and numbers. Letters represent regions of the brain, such as F, frontal, P, parietal, O, occipital, and T, temporal. Odd numbers denote the left hemisphere, even numbers the right, and Z represents the zenith or midline that runs from inian to nasion. Sites on the forehead, above the eyebrows, are signified by FP for frontal polar. This nomenclature provides a clear and universal way to communicate electrode positions. Understanding the brain regions underlying each electrode site is essential for practitioners. For instance, electrodes placed at F7 and F8 are associated with prefrontal activity, which can reflect emotional regulation and decision-making. Similarly, electrodes at PZ or O1 provide insights into posterior regions involved in visual processing and attention. Electrodes placed at T3 and T4 are positioned over the temporal lobes, regions involved in auditory processing and memory. Highlighting these functional connections during the setup process can help practitioners interpret data more effectively. Practitioners should familiarize themselves with these functional correlations to enhance the interpretation of EEG results. Step-by-step guide for measuring and marking. The first step in electrode placement is measuring and marking the scalp. Using a non-toxic grease pencil can be helpful for marking sites. Begin by measuring the nasion to inian distance using a flexible measuring tape. Place the tape flat against the scalp, ensuring it follows the natural contour of the head. Mark the midpoint, 50% of the total distance, on the scalp. This is approximately CZ. Next, measure the distance between the left and right preauricular points. Find the midpoint of this line and adjust the location of CZ to the left or right if necessary. From CZ, measure 20% of the nasion to inian distance forward to locate FC and backward to locate PZ. Measure an additional 20% forward from FC to find FPZ, and an additional 20% backward from PZ to find OZ. As a result, the FPZ site will be 10% of the inian nasion distance above the nasion, and OZ site will be 10% of the inian nasion distance above the inian. Along the line connecting the two preauricular notches, mark 20% of the on each side of CZ locate C3 and C4. From C3 and C4, measure 20% toward each preauricular point to locate T3 and T4. As a result, T3 and T4 will each be located 10% of the distance over the central strip from their closest preauricular notches. For circumferential sites, measure the total circumference of the head, passing through landmarks of FPZ, T3, OZ, and T4. Divide this measurement in half and calculate 10% and 20% of that half circumference distance. Proceeding clockwise from the center of the forehead, FP2, on the right, is located on the circumferential line at a point 10% of the half circumference distance from FPZ. F8 is 20% farther along the line, with T4, T6, and O2 being each 20% farther. This results in O2 being 10% of the half circumference distance from OZ. Repeat this method for the left side. Ensure all measurements are recorded precisely and consistently. Use a non-toxic marker to mark each site clearly, taking care to avoid smudging. For clients with long hair, parting the hair at each site and using clips to secure sections can make marking easier. It is essential to re-measure critical distances as a verification step. Misalignments or errors in marking can significantly impact the quality of data collected. Practitioners should also ensure that the client remains seated in an upright and relaxed position during measurements to maintain accuracy. Adjusting for variations in head shape or size may be necessary, especially for pediatric or geriatric clients. When making such an adjustment, record any deviations along with its rationale. Identifying and placing intermediate sites. This leaves four remaining sites on the scalp, F3, F4, P3, and P4. Find F3 by locating the midpoint on an imaginary line between FP1 and C3, and adjust that halfway point so that it is equidistant from F7 and FC. Find F4 in a similar manner using analogous sites on the right. Find P3 and P4 by locating the midpoint on an imaginary line from C3 to O1 or C4 to O2, and adjust that halfway point so that it is equidistant from T5 to PZ or T6 and PZ. Accurate placement of intermediate sites is critical for capturing specific brain activity associated with these regions. Practitioners should double-check measurements and cross-reference with visual guides or standardized charts. Using a site mapping template can further enhance precision and reduce setup time. Placement of ground or reference electrodes. Ear lobes, or the mastoid processes just behind the ears, are often used for ground or reference electrodes, are identified as O1 on the left and A2 on the right. Verifying placements. Verification is an essential part of the electrode placement process. After marking all sites, practitioners should review measurements to confirm that they align with the 10 to 20 systems guidelines. Measure twice or ask a coworker to double-check each distance. Consistency in placement ensures that data collected across sessions or with different practitioners is comparable. In addition to visual and manual checks, practitioners can use caps with predefined electrode slots. These caps streamline the placement process by aligning with standardized measurements. However, even with caps, practitioners must ensure that the cap fits the client's head snugly, but not too tightly, and that each electrode aligns with the defined sites. Advanced tools, such as 3D scanning devices, can also verify electrode placements. These technologies provide a digital map of the scalp, ensuring that all electrode sites are within acceptable tolerances. While these tools are not universally available, they represent a valuable asset in research and clinical settings where precision is paramount. Practical tips for efficient placement. Efficiency is important in clinical settings where multiple clients may need EEG setup in a single day. To improve efficiency without sacrificing accuracy, practitioners can prepare scalp measurement templates or use pre-marked caps for common head sizes. Having multiple sets of measuring tapes and markers available also helps streamline the process. An easily accessible record of distances, e.g., 10% and 20% of the distance from anion to nasion, between the two pericular notches, from FPZ to FP1 and from FP1 to F7, eliminates the time from calculations. For clients with thick or long hair, practitioners can use hair clips to secure sections and expose the scalp. Gentle combing or parting ensures clear access to electrode sites. Communicating with clients throughout the process, explaining what each step entails and why it is necessary, helps build trust and keeps them comfortable during setup. Providing mirrors or images to show clients how the electrodes are placed can also help alleviate concerns or misconceptions. Site preparation for EEG electrode placement. Once a site is located, proper site preparation is crucial to ensure accurate EEG recordings and to minimize artifacts. The process involves cleaning the scalp, securely attaching electrodes, and reducing impedance. This lecture will provide a comprehensive, step-by-step guide to site preparation using best practices for hygiene, client comfort, and signal quality. Preparing the scalp for electrode placement. The first step in site preparation is to clean the scalp thoroughly. Start by instructing the client to arrive with clean, dry hair, avoiding the use of conditioners, gels, or other hair products. These substances can interfere with electrode adhesion and increase impedance. If necessary, clients should wash their hair the night before or on the morning of the session. If FP1 or FP2 is used as a recording site, also ask the client to defer using makeup on their forehead. Once the client is seated comfortably, identify the electrode sites using the 10 to 20 system or other protocol-specific placement guidelines. Part the hair at each site using a fine-tooth comb or hair clips to expose the scalp. For individuals with thick or long hair, sectioning the hair into manageable parts with clips can improve access to the scalp. Using an alcohol wipe or swab, clean each electrode site to remove oil, dirt, and other contaminants. Apply moderate pressure to ensure thorough cleaning, but avoid causing discomfort to the client. Allow the alcohol to dry completely before proceeding to the next step. This drying time is essential to prevent skin irritation and ensure better contact with the electrodes. If high-quality signal acquisition is required, slightly abrade the scalp at the electrode sites. Use a specialized abrasive gel like New Prep or a blunt, sterile instrument designed for this purpose. Apply the gel with a cotton swab or gauze, rubbing in small, circular motions until the area shows slight redness. This step removes dead skin cells and enhances electrical conductivity between the scalp and electrodes. Always explain this procedure to the client beforehand, addressing any concerns they may have. Remove any excess gel with a tissue or alcohol pad. For clients with sensitive skin or a low tolerance for abrasion, modern high-impedance amplifiers can often achieve acceptable results without abrasion. In these cases, use an enhanced cleaning technique with alcohol wipes or alternative skin preparation solutions. Monitor the signal quality closely during the session to ensure it meets the required standards. Applying conductive gel and preparing electrodes. All electrodes should be made of the same metal. Do not, for example, mix tin and silver electrodes. Conductive gel plays a critical role in reducing impedance and ensuring reliable EEG signal transmission. After cleaning and preparing the scalp, apply a small amount of conductive gel to each electrode site with a cotton swab. Avoid spreading the gel over a larger area than necessary to minimize mess and prevent bridging artifacts. Next, prepare the electrodes by filling their cups with conductive paste or gel. Ensure there are no air bubbles in the paste, as these can compromise signal quality. Use a spatula that is rigid but not so hard as to scratch the electrodes and scoop an amount of paste that will completely fill the electrode and leave a small mound on top. The mound should be large enough that when the electrode is pressed onto the scalp, a small ring of paste around the electrode can be seen. This amount of paste is generally sufficient to make the electrode stick securely in place. For reusable electrodes, verify that they have been cleaned and sterilized according to manufacturer guidelines before use. Place each electrode onto the prepared scalp site. Gently press the electrode to ensure good contact with the skin, but avoid applying excessive force. Secure the electrode in place using adhesive rings or tape if necessary. For clip-style electrodes placed on the, ensure they fit snugly without causing discomfort. Check that the cables are oriented naturally to prevent tension or pulling, which could dislodge the electrodes during the session. It is efficient to preload a pair of cotton swabs, one with abrasive gel and one with electrode paste, that are within easy reach together with facial tissues or alcohol pads. After measurement to find a site, one can hold parted hair in place with one's non-dominant hand while reaching for the cotton swabs, tissues, and pads in turn. This lets one apply a dab of electrode paste to the scalp, which keeps the hair parted and the site marked so that the electrode can then be easily put in place. Mitigating impedance and optimizing signal quality. Impedance refers to the resistance to electrical signal flow between the electrode and the scalp. High impedance can distort EEG readings and introduce noise into the data. To mitigate this, measure impedance at each electrode site after placement using the EEG system's built-in tools or a separate impedance meter. Ideally, impedance values should be below 5 cohms for research-grade recordings. For clinical sessions, values under 20 cohms are generally acceptable, particularly when using modern high-impedance amplifiers. However, if homologous sites are used, F3 and F4, they should have comparable levels of impedance. If the impedance is too high at any site, recheck the electrode placement, ensure sufficient conductive gel has been applied, and consider recleaning or abrading the scalp. Common causes of high impedance include inadequate scalp cleaning, insufficient gel application, or loose electrode attachment. Address these issues systematically, starting with the simplest solution, such as pressing on the electrode, replacing the electrode paste, or adding more paste. For persistent problems, re-clean the site or replace the electrode with a new one. Always document adjustments made during the session for future reference. Encourage the client to remain still and relaxed during this process, as movement can temporarily increase impedance readings. Positioning the client in a comfortable chair with head support minimizes motion and improves overall signal quality. Multi-channel or QEG recording. For multi-channel or quantitative EEG, QEG, assessments, additional steps are required to ensure comprehensive data collection. Begin by selecting the appropriate protocol for the client's condition. For example, a full CAP QEG may be needed for baseline assessments or advanced interventions. Select a CAP size that matches the client's head size, and that is neither too tight nor too loose. Attach the CAP securely to the client's head, aligning it with the previously marked sites. Double-check the alignment to avoid signal inconsistencies caused by CAP slippage. Apply conductive gel with a syringe and blunted needle, and wiggle the tip of the needle gently to ensure that the gel makes good contact between the scalp and electrode without bubbles. Only the amount of gel to fill the electrode cup should be used. It can help to hold the electrode cup in place with one hand while depressing the plunger of the syringe with the other. When a small amount of gel emerges from the top of the cup, it is usually a sign that the cup has filled sufficiently with gel. Check the impedance for each channel using the software. Channels with high impedance should be addressed by again wiggling the blunted needle or a thin wooden rod, such as found with some cotton swabs. Apply additional conductive gel with caution. Perform a tracking test to monitor signal quality across all channels and ensure that artifact-producing movement and muscle tension are minimized. This involves observing the unfolding signal without recording. It can also help the client to observe the signals so they can reduce behaviors that might generate artifacts or irregularities. For assessment purposes, collect data in both eyes open and eyes closed conditions. Eyes open data captures active brain states, while eyes closed data reflects resting states. Ensure that the client remains still and avoids unnecessary movements during recording. Encourage relaxation by providing a comfortable chair and minimizing external distractions. Explain the purpose of these conditions to the client, as understanding their role in the process can enhance cooperation. After recording, review the raw EEG data for artifacts. Common artifacts include muscle activity, eye movements, and environmental noise. Use the software's editing tools to remove these artifacts, ensuring clean and valid data for analysis. Export the process data for further interpretation or database comparison. Practitioners should also save backup copies of the raw data to preserve the original recording for future reference or research purposes. Similarly, data from multi-channel or full CAP training sessions can be saved, with artifact removal and quantitative analysis occurring later. Troubleshooting and maintenance. Troubleshooting is an integral part of the EEG setup. Common issues include high impedance, signal loss, and artifacts. For high impedance, recheck scalp preparation and electrode placement. Ensure adequate conductive paste is used, and verify that all connections are secure. For signal loss, inspect cables and connectors for damage. Replace faulty components as needed. Keeping a troubleshooting guide handy with common error codes and solutions for the equipment can expedite problem resolution. Artifact management involves identifying and mitigating sources of interference. Demonstrate to the client how movements such as blinking or jaw clenching affect the EEG signal. Position the client in a comfortable, stable chair to minimize motion. For persistent artifacts, consider using filtering options within the software, though these should be applied judiciously to avoid distorting the data. Some software systems include real-time artifact rejection, which can improve the quality of the recorded data without requiring manual intervention. Maintenance of equipment is essential for consistent performance. After each session, clean the electrodes and cables with an approved solution. Store the equipment in a clean, dry environment to prevent damage. Regularly inspect the amplifier and computer for updates or technical issues. Ensure that batteries are charged. By adhering to these maintenance practices, practitioners ensure reliability and longevity of the EEG system. Practitioners should also schedule periodic calibration of the amplifier to maintain optimal performance and accuracy. Additionally, maintaining a log of equipment performance and issues can help identify patterns or recurring problems. Training all staff members in proper equipment care and troubleshooting procedures ensures consistency and reduces downtime during sessions. A well-maintained EEG system not only improves client outcomes but also enhances the overall efficiency of the practice. Elimination of artifact from EEG recording. Artifacts in EEG recordings are unwanted signals that originate from non-cerebral sources. These artifacts can interfere with the accurate interpretation of brain activity and compromise the quality of data. Effective identification and management of these artifacts are essential for obtaining reliable EEG results. This essay provides a comprehensive discussion of common types of artifacts, their sources, and strategies to reduce or eliminate their impact on EEG recordings. Physiological artifacts. Physiological artifacts arise from the body's natural electrical activity other than that of the brain. Common examples include eye movements, muscle contractions, and cardiac signals. Eye movement artifacts, also known as electroocular artifacts, are among the most prevalent. These occur due to the electrical potential difference between the cornea and retina, which moves during eye blinks, saccades, or prolonged gaze shifts. Eye movement artifacts are often visible as large slow waves in frontal channels and can mimic cerebral activity if not properly identified. To manage eye artifacts, practitioners can employ techniques such as instructing clients to minimize eye movements and blinking during recording. However, complete avoidance is rarely feasible. Software-based correction methods, such as independent component analysis, ICA, can be used to separate and remove eye-related signals from the EEG data. Proper placement of electrodes can also help isolate ocular activity for easier identification and removal. Placing additional electrodes near the eyes, such as below and lateral to each eye, can create dedicated channels to track eye movement patterns more precisely for easier removal. Another approach involves pre-session preparation. Clients can be trained to avoid unnecessary blinking or excessive eye movement during data collection. Practitioners might provide visual cues or relaxation exercises to reduce blinking frequency and improve recording quality. Sometimes, the client can be instructed to reduce the frequency of eye blinks by blinking once slowly and then waiting several seconds before blinking again. This makes the eye blink obvious for easy artifact removal and moistens the eye while reducing drying that provokes blinking. Asking the client to close their eyelids a small amount can also reduce surface area drying, which could lead to blinking. Additionally, periodic breaks during long sessions allow the client to rest their eyes, which can minimize the impact of ocular fatigue on the EEG signal. Muscle activity, or electromyographic, EMG, artifacts is another significant source of physiological interference. These artifacts result from muscle contractions in the face, jaw, or neck and typically present as high-frequency signals in the EEG. They can occur during speaking, chewing, or even subtle tension in the jaw. To minimize EMG artifacts, clients should be instructed to relax and avoid unnecessary movements during recording. Practitioners should position the client comfortably and provide head support to reduce muscle strain. Practitioners may also utilize pre-session strategies to address muscle tension. Guided relaxation techniques, such as deep breathing exercises or progressive muscle relaxation, can reduce baseline tension in the facial and neck muscles. For clients prone to clenching or grinding their teeth, placing soft padding under the chin or providing a gentle headband for support can minimize unwanted movements. Cardiac artifacts, also known as electrocardiographic ECG artifacts, stem from the heart's electrical activity. These are often visible in channels close to major blood vessels, such as temporal electrodes. While less common, they can overlap with slow wave activity and complicate data interpretation. ECG artifacts can be mitigated by adjusting electrode placement to avoid proximity to pulsating arteries. Advanced filtering techniques can also help isolate and subtract cardiac signals from the EEG data. For particularly challenging cases, additional electrodes placed on the torso or neck can capture the cardiac signal for subsequent removal during post-processing. Exogenous artifacts. Exogenous artifacts are caused by external environmental factors rather than physiological sources. These include power line interference, equipment malfunctions, and ambient noise. Power line interference, typically seen as a 50 Hz or 60 Hz sinusoidal wave, is one of the most recognizable exogenous artifacts. It arises from electromagnetic fields generated by electrical devices and wiring in the recording environment. To eliminate power line interference, practitioners should ensure that all EEG equipment is properly grounded and shielded. Recording sessions should be conducted in a controlled environment, free from unnecessary electronic devices. Notch filters specifically tuned to the frequency of power line noise can be applied during post-processing to remove this artifact without affecting other frequency bands. Using a Faraday cage or electromagnetic shielding materials in the recording room can further reduce power line interference. Equipment-related artifacts occur due to issues with the EEG hardware or cables. Examples include electrode pops, which produce sudden, large deflections in the EEG signal, and cable movement artifacts, which create irregular noise patterns. Regular maintenance of EEG equipment and careful electrode setup are critical to preventing these issues. Practitioners should inspect all components for wear or damage before each session and replace faulty parts as needed. Tightening cable connections and securing loose wires with clips or ties can prevent inadvertent movements that lead to artifacts. Ambient noise from the recording environment can also introduce artifacts. Sources may include vibrations from HVAC systems, external conversations, or even nearby traffic. Soundproofing the recording room and using noise-canceling equipment can reduce the impact of these environmental factors. Additionally, instructing clients to remain still and minimizing room entry or exit during recording sessions can help maintain a stable and artifact-free environment. For portable or home-based EEG setups, practitioners should educate clients on creating an optimal recording environment. Simple steps, such as turning off nearby electronic devices, choosing a quiet room, and ensuring stable seating, can significantly reduce exogenous artifacts. Movement artifacts. Movement artifacts are another common challenge in EEG recordings. These artifacts are caused by client movements, such as head tilts, shifts in posture, or involuntary motions. Movement artifacts can produce large amplitude changes and are often mistaken for cerebral signals, particularly in low-frequency bands. To reduce movement artifacts, clients should be positioned comfortably in a supportive chair with head supports if necessary. Practitioners should educate clients about the importance of staying still during recording and provide frequent reminders throughout the session. For pediatric clients or individuals with conditions that make stillness difficult, shorter recording segments with breaks in between can help minimize movement artifacts during recording. Electrode displacement due to movement is a specific concern. Loose or poorly secured electrodes can create spurious signals that distort the EEG. To address this, practitioners should double-check electrode attachments and use adhesive rings or caps to ensure a secure fit. Monitoring impedance levels during the session can also help identify and rectify issues caused by movement. If necessary, practitioners may apply additional conductive gel to stabilize electrodes without interrupting the session significantly. Some advanced EEG systems offer motion detection capabilities that flag periods of significant movement. Practitioners can use these features to identify and exclude affected segments during data analysis. Additionally, instructing clients on proper posture and providing ergonomic chairs with adjustable supports can further enhance stability during sessions. Strategies to reduce artifacts. Effective artifact management involves a combination of preventive measures, real-time monitoring, and post-processing techniques. Preventive strategies begin with proper site preparation, including thorough cleaning of the scalp and appropriate application of conductive gel. Well-prepared electrode sites reduce impedance and minimize the likelihood of artifact contamination. Real-time monitoring during EEG recording allows practitioners to address artifacts as they occur. Observing the raw EEG data on screen can help identify specific channels affected by artifacts. Adjusting electrode placement, tightening loose cables, or asking the client to modify their behavior can mitigate issues without interrupting the session. Sometimes a recording can be paused while artifacts are addressed. Practitioners should maintain open communication with the client, providing clear instructions and addressing any discomfort that may lead to movement or muscle tension. Post-processing techniques are invaluable for artifact removal after data collection. Advanced algorithms, such as ICA or regression-based methods, can separate cerebral signals from non-cerebral activity. Filters tailored to specific frequency bands can also suppress artifacts like power line interference. However, practitioners should apply these tools judiciously to avoid over-filtering, which can distort genuine brain signals. Artifact reduction strategies should be documented and tailored to individual clients. For instance, clients with high muscle tension may benefit from relaxation exercises before the session, while those prone to movement artifacts may require additional support or shorter recording intervals. By combining multiple approaches, practitioners can enhance the overall quality of EEG data and ensure accurate analysis. Training practitioners in artifact detection and correction techniques is critical to achieving high-quality EEG recordings. It is often helpful before beginning a session to ask the client to observe the display screen while instructing them to produce various artifacts and see their effects on the EEG signal. Doing so teaches the client to recognize their behaviors, eye movement, jaw clenching, that might produce artifacts so that they can note when they occur and quickly inhibit them. Ongoing education and practice enable practitioners to recognize subtle artifact patterns and apply appropriate interventions efficiently. With thorough preparation, vigilant monitoring, and skilled post-processing, the impact of artifacts can be minimized, ensuring reliable and clinically valuable EEG data. Descriptive terms in EEG interpretation. Descriptive terms are fundamental to the interpretation and communication of EEG findings. These terms encompass amplitude classifications, duration categories, and common EEG acronyms, each serving as a critical tool for clinicians and technicians. This lecture provides practical guidance on using these terms to enhance clarity and precision in EEG analysis and reporting. Amplitude classifications. Amplitude classifications describe the strength of EEG signals, which is typically measured in microvolts, V. Understanding amplitude is crucial for differentiating normal from abnormal brain activity. In standard practice, EEG amplitudes are categorized as low, medium, or high. Low amplitudes range from 0 to 20 V, medium amplitudes fall between 20 and 50 V, and high amplitudes exceed 50 V. Clinicians and technicians must note these ranges while interpreting patterns in different brain regions. In the alpha frequency band, 8 to 12 Hz, amplitudes typically range from 20 to 100 V in healthy adults during wakeful relaxation with eyes closed. A reduction in alpha amplitude can indicate cortical dysfunction or neurological conditions such as Alzheimer's disease. Conversely, abnormally high alpha amplitudes may be associated with drowsiness or medication effects. Practitioners must carefully document these variations, where they occur, and whether they are bilaterally symmetric to inform diagnostic decisions. Beta activity, 13 to 30 Hz, generally presents with low amplitudes, ranging from 5 to 20 V. Excessive beta amplitude may indicate anxiety, medication effects, e.g., benzodiazepines, or hyperarousal. In contrast, diminished beta amplitude is often observed in individuals with depression or other neuropsychiatric conditions. Recognizing these patterns helps clinicians correlate EEG findings with clinical presentations. Delta and theta activities, typically associated with slow-wave sleep or pathological conditions, often exhibit higher amplitudes. Delta waves, 0.5 to 4 Hz, can exceed 100 V in amplitude, particularly in deep sleep stages. Persistent high-amplitude delta activity in waking states may indicate structural brain damage or encephalopathy. Similarly, theta waves, 4 to 8 Hz, with amplitudes above 50 V during wakefulness may suggest developmental abnormalities or diffuse cerebral dysfunction. Amplitude asymmetry between hemispheres is another critical factor in EEG analysis. While minor variations are common, significant differences may indicate localized pathology such as stroke, tumor, or traumatic brain injury. Technicians should ensure that electrode placements are accurate and impedance levels are low to rule out technical artifacts before reporting asymmetry. Duration categories. Duration categories in EEG describe the temporal characteristics of waveforms, which play a crucial role in identifying normal and abnormal patterns. Waveforms are broadly classified as transient, rhythmic, or continuous based on their duration and periodicity. Transient activity refers to brief, isolated waveforms lasting less than 0.5 seconds. Examples include vertex waves and K-complexes, which are normal features of sleep. Transients can also represent pathological phenomena, such as epileptiform spikes or sharp waves. Technicians should carefully note the morphology, location, and frequency of transients to differentiate between normal variants and abnormalities. Rhythmic activity is characterized by repetitive, sinusoidal waveforms that occur at regular intervals. Posterior alpha rhythm during wakefulness is a prototypical example of rhythmic activity. Abnormal rhythmic patterns, such as rhythmic temporal theta bursts, may indicate focal seizures or other localized pathologies. Technicians must document the frequency, amplitude, and spatial distribution of rhythmic activity to aid in clinical interpretation. Continuous activity describes waveforms that persist without interruption over extended periods. Examples include continuous slow-wave activity in encephalopathy or diffuse beta activity induced by sedative medications. Continuous patterns often provide critical insights into the global state of brain function and should be meticulously described in reports. Mixed duration patterns, combining transient, rhythmic, and continuous elements, are commonly observed in complex neurological conditions. For instance, in epilepsy, interictal discharges may transition from brief transients to rhythmic bursts and ultimately evolve into continuous ictal activity. Understanding these temporal dynamics is essential for accurate seizure characterization and treatment planning. Duration categories also intersect with frequency and amplitude classifications. For example, high-amplitude rhythmic delta activity in continuous patterns may suggest severe diffuse cerebral dysfunction, such as hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy. Technicians should integrate observations across these dimensions to provide a comprehensive analysis of EEG findings. Common EEG acronyms. EEG interpretation involves a variety of acronyms that simplify the documentation of patterns and findings. Familiarity with these acronyms is essential for clinicians and technicians to maintain consistency and efficiency in reporting. One of the most common acronyms is PDR, posterior dominant rhythm, which refers to the alpha activity observed in the occipital regions during relaxed wakefulness with eyes closed. The PDR is a key marker of normal brain function, and its absence or attenuation, or marked asymmetry may indicate cortical dysfunction. For example, a reduced PDR frequency in elderly individuals could suggest mild cognitive impairment or early-stage dementia. Another frequently used acronym is FIRDA, frontal intermittent rhythmic delta activity. FIRDA represents periodic bursts of delta waves in the frontal regions and is often associated with structural or metabolic abnormalities, such as hydrocephalus or hepatic encephalopathy. Accurate recognition and reporting of FURTA help prioritize further diagnostic evaluations. GPFA, generalized paroxysmal fast activity, is another term commonly encountered in EEG studies of epilepsy. GPFA describes bursts of high-frequency activity that may herald generalized tonic-clonic seizures. Technicians must document the onset, duration, and associated clinical symptoms of GPFA to assist neurologists in seizure classification. SRIDA, subclinical rhythmic electrographic discharges in adults, refers to a benign pattern of rhythmic delta activity that can mimic epileptiform discharges. Found predominantly in older adults, SRIDA requires careful differentiation from pathological findings. Understanding its non-epileptic nature helps prevent misdiagnosis and unnecessary treatment. POSTS, positive occipital sharp transients of sleep, a benign pattern seen during drowsiness, are sharp, wave-like signals observed in the occipital region. POSTS are significant as they can mimic epileptiform discharges. However, their occurrence during sleep or drowsiness and lack of clinical symptoms differentiate them from pathological patterns. Accurately identifying POSTS ensures that they are not misinterpreted as a sign of epilepsy. BETS, benign epileptiform transients of sleep, are sharp waveforms seen primarily in the central or temporal regions during sleep. BETS are of low amplitude and occur in isolation, without accompanying pathological features. Recognizing BETS is crucial as they are often mistaken for epileptiform activity, leading to overdiagnosis of epilepsy. Clear documentation and an understanding of their benign nature help prevent unnecessary interventions. BSSS, brief rhythm slow sharp spikes, refer to sharp waveforms observed near skull defects, such as surgical sites or trauma-induced openings. These spikes arise due to altered conductivity at the site of the defect. Recognizing BSSS is vital in distinguishing it from pathological discharges. Accurate reporting of BSSS allows clinicians to correlate findings with the patient's surgical or trauma history, avoiding diagnostic confusion. RMTD, rhythmic mid-temporal theta of drowsiness, is a benign EEG pattern characterized by rhythmic theta activity in the mid-temporal regions. RMTD often occurs during drowsiness or light sleep and is more common in younger individuals. Differentiating RMTD from epileptiform discharges is essential, as its benign nature does not warrant anti-epileptic treatment. Clinicians and technicians should note the absence of clinical symptoms during episodes of RMTD to avoid misdiagnosis. Wicket waves are another benign EEG finding, appearing as arch-shaped waveforms predominantly in the temporal regions. These waves are most commonly observed in adults during drowsiness or light sleep. Wicket waves resemble epileptiform activity but lack the sharpness and disruptive features of true epileptiform discharges. Identifying wicket waves accurately helps prevent unnecessary investigations or treatments for epilepsy. Accurate application of descriptive terms, including amplitude classifications, acronyms, and duration categories, empowers clinicians and technicians to interpret EEG recordings effectively. By mastering these terms and their practical implications, practitioners enhance the reliability of EEG diagnostics and contribute to improved patient outcomes.